Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. And we encourage you to join us every week. We encourage you to listen to us on the stream at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, as well as rebroadcast on A-Z.fm. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So lots of opportunity, as we always say, to let you know about what's going on in our world, if you will, with our guests. And so there you go. I think that's sufficient information for you. So please join us each week and go to our archives page and listen to the interviews that we've done. There's also a secondary interviews page, if you will. It's extra interviews. It's interviews that I have done. I've gotten ahead considerably. And so you can go there and listen to interviews that will have not made it to the airwaves yet, but will. And you'll be able to hear it before anybody else on terrestrial radio. So we encourage you to do that. It's so great to be with you. I'm so excited to have as my guest here on the program, Lorraine Flaherty. And we're going to be talking about healing. Healing is a big issue in our world today, in our country today, and maybe in your life today. I can tell you that at the beginning of 2014, I went in to see my physician. I had the usual physical, the blood test, all of the other fluids checked. I had the points in the condensers. I had the spark plugs changed, and I liked it so much I took my car in. Anyway, I was diagnosed with a couple of things, but the doctor says, I'm not going to give you any pills because I'm going to prescribe for you basically that you need to exercise and you need to drop a few pounds. Now, I'm not overweight. My wife would admit to that fact that I am not by no means overweight. But it would behoove me to drop maybe 10, 15 pounds, get back down to the weight that I was maybe 16 years ago, which is not unreasonable. Shift down from a 38-inch waist to 36. That would be nice. And we're going to talk a little bit about this aspect of it, but from a little different perspective, as we often do here on the program. And Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you here on Tell Me Your Story.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, you deal with healing in a very, very unique way. And that has to do with, and I find this really fascinating, it has to do with dealing with our past lives. So I'm curious as to, and we've talked an awful lot about reincarnation on this program, and obviously past lives and the impact that it has on our personalities and all of the different aspects that make up who and what we are, but never really thought too much about it in the context of health. So maybe you can enlighten us a little bit in that regard.
Yes, absolutely. When working with past lives, it often provides us with clues as to the challenges that we face in our current lives. And those challenges can be both emotional, but they can also be psychological, which can also lead to physical ailments and problems that people can have. But in my experience, sometimes even physical problems that people have that have been unexplained by the medical profession can be answered when people go back and explore events from previous lives. So sometimes unexplained problems with throats may have been the result of a past life when somebody was hung, digestion problems, they may have been hung, drawn and quartered. All kinds of things, but when people go back and reconnect to these past lives and then heal what went on back then, the healing actually transfers to the current life. And often people find that those ailments that they were told could not be resolved, could not be fixed, actually go away. They actually disappear.
I'm getting a lot of books these days on taking care of oneself. And of course, it's talking about, I'm not sure if it takes place where you live, but I know that here we deal with the issue of a contaminated food and water supply on a lot of different levels. And what I'm gleaning from a lot of this is that the human body, and this is, we're dealing primarily with the physical aspects here, is nothing more than a filter. and that what you take in, the body is going to filter through and it's going to process and use what it can use and, you know, slough off the rest. But if that filter gets clogged, then the body starts to exhibit all kinds of disorders and diseases. And a lot of our medical community is just about dealing with symptoms. And so there are people who are taking 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 plus different medications for all of the disorders that they've been diagnosed with. That's why I was so pleased when my physician said to me, I'm not prescribing anything for you, not at this point, not unless you decide you don't want to exercise, which I love doing, getting out and walking here in Santa Barbara. And I definitely want to drop these few pounds. And I think my biggest challenge was getting off of soft drinks. That's huge for a lot of people. And so one of the things that I find so interesting is that, again, that my physician said to me, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to set you up to fail down the road. I'm going to give you an opportunity to really make a difference in that regard. And I think he did. I think he did a big service to me. But unfortunately, our medical community, they're not really interested in that because it doesn't pay as much.
Absolutely. And I salute your doctor. What a wonderful approach to have. But I have to say that I currently teach clinical hypnosis to student doctors in universities all over the UK, including Oxford and Cambridge and the University College London. And what's wonderful is that many of these young doctors that are coming through are opening their eyes to the fact that there is so much more to just handing out tablets and just using the pharmaceuticals. And many of them are coming in with an approach that is much more holistic. They're wanting to look at the connection between what a person is thinking and how their beliefs are having an impact. But I also find that it's quite extraordinary just how little attention is paid to nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been times when these young students are sat in front of me and they are consuming fizzy drinks and they're eating junk food. And I've had to sit and explain to them how important it is that they are filling themselves with the right things, especially when they're studying and they're learning and they want their minds to be in an optimal state. And no one actually talks to them about this. And so, again, I see my role very much is planting seeds, dropping seeds into the minds of these young guys who are going out there and will be the future doctors. And getting them to realize just how important it is. And just as the body is a filter that is absorbing and taking on everything that is put into it, I see the mind as being a very similar, and our energetic field, our kind of energy body. Because I believe that the work that I do in the past life work is a little bit like clutter clearing for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Even.
Yeah.
About going in and finding the unresolved business, the unfinished stuff, all the stuff that has been picked up through all the different lifetimes that is a bit like pollutants that would be in the body from the wrong food, but all the mental stuff that has kind of clogged up and to help the person to clear it, to get it out of the way so that they can be lighter, so they have more clarity, and so that they're able to function more effectively in their current lives.
Before we go any further, Lorraine, could I ask you to check your microphone? Because I'm hearing a thumping every so often on your microphone, and you're not as clear as you were when we started. What type of system are you working with?
It's just on my laptop. Let me move so that I'll come in closer. And then.
Yeah, right there you touched the microphone. I don't know where it is on your laptop.
Yeah, is that okay now?
That's a little bit better, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we'll try that. 3, 2, 1. Well, when we talk about this whole aspect of what the human body is, and of course my analogy of the filter, I was even sharing this analogy with my wife, and I said that, you know, a lot of people love to use the car as an, you know, sort of a synonym of the human body. Unfortunately, if you use the oil filter from a car as an example, usually you don't clean out the oil filter. You throw it away and get a new one. But that only works if you're done with your life. If you've lived your life full and you've done everything you wanted to do and it was time to change bodies, then you can change the oil filter then. But until then, you don't want to do that. That's counterproductive. But what I am noticing is that the fountain of youth, if you will, that people are looking for, it does exist, but not in the way that most people think. Would you say that the fountain of youth is just what we've been talking about, that if you start putting the right fuels, if you will, into the body so that the filtration system can function correctly, then you stand chance of living a long and productive life if you so choose?
I think so, absolutely. I think that the basic premise should be eat less, move more. And I think that not all of the world, but most of the people in the Western world, I think, consume far more than they need. And I'm a great advocate of loving food. I think that food is fuel, but I also think it should be a pleasure, it should be a delight, we should celebrate and we should really enjoy food. But we should also be eating real food that is as nature created it. I think that we've become lazy and that often things that are processed or pre-packaged or pre-prepared, it seems like the easy option, but I think that with many things nowadays in life where people want the fast route and they want things to be happening quickly, they have no patience for things, I think that there is a very short-term gratification, and I think that people aren't looking at the long-term consequences of it. So, yes, absolutely. I'm also very aware that it's not just what you put into your body, as in food-wise, but I think people also have to be very, very aware of what they're absorbing in every aspect of their life. And that goes for television, it goes for the movies they watch, it goes for the music they listen to. It even comes down to their own thoughts and the general types of conversations that they engage in every day, the people that they choose to spend time with. I do think that we're absorbing everything from the environment around us, and it has an impact on our internal state. And of course, that then, how we feel on the inside, determines our behaviours and our actions, and then the feedback that we get back from the outside world. So everything that we absorb is really important, and I think people need to be consciously aware all the time of what they're doing.
I have to wonder if you've been sneaking a peek at my book, because that's pretty much what I've said, only the term I use is your personal input,
right?
Whatever that may be. And yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Even to the places that you frequent, the places just that you go, and yeah, the people that you associate with can have, I mean, just an incredible or devastating effect on you. And it doesn't matter whether they're family or not. That doesn't mean that you have to, you know, subject yourself to those kinds of things. I think that one of the aspects of this program is bringing people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. And a lot of times people don't even realize that regardless of relationship, you know, you still have a choice.
Absolutely. When I was growing up, one of my phrases used to be, I didn't ask to be born. And of course, I kind of giggle to myself with the work that I do and the fact that I now recognize that not only did I choose to be born, but I chose the family that I was born into so that they could provide me with the lessons that I needed to learn.
Yeah.
And I'm also really, really aware of the phrase that you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. It also ties into that because I do think that we chose them.
Yes.
But I believe that we do choose people that come in and out of our lives. Sometimes they're going to support us. Sometimes they're going to challenge us. And I think that we have to take personal responsibility for all of the things that happen. And yes, we have a choice. We have a choice as to how much we engage with those people that provide difficulties for us. And we can choose to learn. We can choose to understand. And a lot of the times, the lesson is about valuing ourselves. And when people behave in inappropriate manners, or when people are rude and they are just downright unpleasant to be around, I think that we have to recognize that sometimes you just have to say no. And so even though those people are part of your family group, I believe that it's good to love all peoples unconditionally, but you don't always have to like them, and you don't always have to spend time with them.
So for someone listening right now, what would your recommendation be as far as the first best step to take to begin the process of, and we're not, we could talk about specific conditions and diseases and maladies and disorders, but let's say someone is actually, like myself, doing really pretty doggone good, I think, you know, and I know I could be doing better. What's the best way for me to start, shall we say, tuning up the physical body in this regard? Where from, again, and this is coming from the book, Healing with Past Life Therapies, where would I start? What would step one and then maybe step two be?
Well, in the work that I do, certainly whether it's the clinical hypnosis side or whether it is the healing with the past life side, I do believe that actually learning how to, whether it's meditate or do self-hypnosis, which in medical terms means that we are kind of activating the parasympathetic nervous system response, which is the phase in the body that happens when we're in the sleep state. So it's where healing occurs. And what I know from the majority of people that I see is that stress is one of the biggest causes of problems in the world today. Stress can create both psychological and physiological problems in the body and in the mind. So the first step, I believe, would be to learn these techniques that help you to deal with the results of those stresses, the stress that's caused by having to juggle so many things in life. And not only are there physical benefits to learning that state, but once people manage to get access to the place in the subconscious via hypnosis, self-hypnosis or meditation, it then means that they can start to explore the reasons behind those areas of stress. So they can start to become more consciously aware of the things that are happening. And becoming aware of it, then answers, insights come up as to what actually needs to change.
Well, obviously, that is always the first best step is becoming aware of the issues that you're dealing with. They say that that's probably the hardest step, because a lot of people, they don't, A, want to deal with issues pertaining to their past, whether it be the this life past or past lives past. And other people, they don't even have an awareness that their upbringing has anything to do with where they are today. I'm in the process of going through some of my own personal archives that I've collected over the last 35 years. And I mean, we're going back to the 1980s here, and I'm listening to some of these interviews and one particular series that I produced for a gentleman who, interestingly enough, has since passed away. And the information in these health tapes that we created, I'm listening to the information. I'm going, well, this is no different than what they're saying today. So it's like the information's always been there, but who's out there to hear it?
And I think the wonderful thing nowadays is with the advent of so much more technology and the means for people to get access to information like the internet, I think that the messages that have been around for a very long time have now been translated into lots of different styles and lots of different approaches. And I think that means that it becomes more accessible for people because everybody has a different approach to things. So you need lots of different voices, I think, saying these things and packaging them in slightly different ways, because one approach will actually work for some people and one will work for another. So actually, if you go down to the heart of most therapies or most healing modalities, somewhere at the core of them, the root is usually the same. Mm-hmm. There are various slight differences, but most people are usually saying the same thing when you really knuckle down to it. And I think that the key message is that people need to honour themselves, value themselves first, and love themselves. And that means if you love yourself, you're going to look after yourself. So you're going to put the right things in. You're going to spend time with the right people and doing the right things. I think that at the core, it's fundamental that we just have to stop and value and appreciate ourselves.
That's kind of hard to do for some folks who've been through a lot of stuff in their lives because they've been told just the contrary. So there seems to be still a lot of work to do on that person's self-worth or self-esteem. And I've heard people criticizing the whole self-esteem movement of the last 20 years or so in that respect. But it's like, well, but I mean, I ask the question of some folks, would you treat your best friend and say the things to your best friend that you do and say to yourself? And most people say, well, no, of course not. Then why do you say and do them to yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And the trouble for most people is that they pick up and absorb messages in early childhood before they're really aware of what they're doing. And often the sort of negative self-talk and the being hard on self is a learnt behaviour, but it's so deeply, deeply embedded and it's so deeply programmed that they think it's normal. Mm-hmm. And in the book, I do actually have an exercise where I get people to bring that negative self-talk out into the conscious awareness. I actually get them to do a little exercise where they imagine saying this to somebody else, and it's quite shocking. Mm-hmm. when people actually do think about the repercussions, what it would be like to abuse somebody else in the way that they so frequently do for themselves. And it's that recognition, it's the awareness. And I do believe that sometimes it's quite hard for people that don't understand. So people that don't necessarily give themselves too much of a hard time, if they're not living in the world of a person that does that, it's very hard to conceive. And so a lot of the work that I do is about bringing this stuff up into conscious awareness and then actually making changes at the deep programming level. So getting into those default settings and making adjustments to them. So a lot of the work, yes, it's past life work, but it's often stuff to do with the current life as well, dealing with what I like to call the inner child. So the part of somebody that was made to feel less than or made to feel as though they weren't worthy or deserving. You know, for the best will in the world, most parents at one point or another may not have been able to be present for their child when they were in need. And when a child doesn't feel safe, quite often what they will do is retreat inside, and it's almost as though they put a little shell over themselves and say, the world isn't safe, I'm just going to hide here. And often a person will actually stay at that age, and then anytime they feel threatened, they will respond almost in that childlike manner. And a lot of the times what I do with people is I actually get them to go back and reclaim that lost part of themselves and let that part grow up, you know, offer to honour and support that part of themselves. And it's incredibly moving and very, very powerful. And it means in sort of, you know, Jung would have called it individuation, where you're reclaiming all of those lost parts of self that haven't been present. And people become so much more empowered. Mm-hmm. As a result. And they learn to say no then to the things that aren't right for them.
Before we continue here, Lorraine, I want to ask you if you could do one other thing for me.
Yes, sure.
Are you on your laptop? Is that a Mac or a PC?
It's a PC.
Can you go into there? There is a oh, for the love of Pete. Jesus. Sorry.
Hello.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I don't know what happened there.
I don't know what happened either, but it actually made the quality of the call better.
Yes, I've actually just switched over to my my tablet just to see if the sound is better. So
that actually sounds better.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
3, 2, 1. We're talking with Lorraine Flaherty. She's the author of Healing the Past Life, Healing with Past Life Therapy, Transformational Journeys Through Time and Space. And I'm going to basically conclude, Lorraine, that when you're talking about time and space, you are speaking about more the past lives that we've lived prior to this present existence, rather than necessarily going back into our childhood. Because I remember in the 80s and 90s, that was sort of in vogue that, you know, you went back and you dealt with your childhood issues, whether it was your parents or your siblings, or you were bullied in school or wherever it was that the trauma, the things took place. And in some instances early on, you know, you'd blame your parents. They, you know, it was the parents that were at fault. And I always thought that was a little unfair, because in many cases, and I would put my parents in the same category, my parents did the best they could with what they knew at the time. How can you hold somebody responsible for what they didn't know?
Absolutely. And as I said, the work that I do involves kind of a multi-layered approach, really. I mean, I'm all about getting people to achieve inner freedom. And that means that you have to deal with the current life stuff as well as the other stuff that comes from further back, so the past lives and the issues that came from there. But what's really key, I believe, and it's very much an essence of my work, is getting people to get to a place of personal responsibility and understanding that at a certain level they agreed to experience these events in their lives. So they would have chosen the family that they came into because they would provide for them the exact lessons that they needed to learn, the exact situations and the possibilities for learning and growth for them. And it means that when we understand that, and when we explore the agreements and the life lessons that we chose to learn, we stop blaming other people. We stop blaming them for what we perceive that they do for us, mm-hmm. or do to us.
Yeah.
And we accept that somewhere in the grand scheme of things, we chose it, and that these people are just volunteers in this journey of our life, serving a purpose to help us. So I really believe that the people that provide us with the greatest challenges and the greatest adversity are often our greatest supporters, because we learn the most from them. And they're the ones that help us to grow the most. So I'm all for taking away the idea of blame and actually having gratitude for those souls that help us to grow.
I would agree. They have brought us to the place where we are. We are who we are because of the experiences that we have had. We wouldn't be who we are today if those things, and you know, people talk about, well, gee, if I could just get rid of that part of my past or that part. Well, then you unravel everything and you are no longer the person that you were before you pulled on that thread. So it's important for us. It seems like two very important aspects here. Number one is to acknowledge, to be aware of the issues that you have to deal with. Number two is to accept your life and its experiences, both this life and in the past, for what they are, because they are what has made you who you are today. When you go back and talk to your clients, people that you're working with, maybe in workshops and so forth, Do you find a lot of folks who are very, do they seem to be relatively open? I mean, nobody really comes to you who is resistant to the process, I would think.
Yes, they don't come resistant. Some people come with concerns. I think that still to this day, I think hypnosis, people tend to be a little bit afraid, thinking that I'm going to be able to control them or make them do things that they wouldn't want to do, or that, you know, it's almost like a truth serum, that they're suddenly going to reveal their secrets to me. And I sometimes feel like I disappoint them when I tell them that hypnosis is actually a naturally occurring state and they're going in and out of it all the time anyway, every time they daydream and before they drift off to sleep. So the state itself is very familiar. And once I reassure them that actually it is a natural process and that they're fully in control all the way through and that there is nothing for them to be concerned about, they will experience the past life memories in the same way as if they were recalling like an old holiday memory or something that had happened to them in this life. And as soon as they know how the process works, and when I let them know that they can trust me and that I'm only going to be guiding them on this process that they will be in charge of and in control of, then they relax. And I always point out that the best state for them to be in is curious, because they have no idea where they're going to end up or what information is going to come through. And curiosity is a really good state to be in. And it's quite funny because in my experience, it's always the clients that are a little bit concerned that they might not go anywhere or they might not experience anything who have the most profound sessions.
Mm. I think that being curious, I think that can be such a powerful experience for people. And I think that being curious about what we're talking about here is also very beneficial. We're talking with Lorraine Flaherty. She's the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy. She has also produced a couple of CDs, Inner Freedom 1 and 2. And she also has a website. Tell us, what is your website address?
It's innerjourneys.co.uk.
Innerjourneys.co.uk.
Yeah.
I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We want you to stay right where you are, and we'll be right back.
Talk with me. Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We are talking with Lorraine Flaherty, the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy. And I'm wondering, Lorraine, in the context of our conversation here, what has been the reception of your colleagues or other people? Because you have to have interaction with the medical community there in the UK even. In terms of, I mean, it's not like you're trying to go around and heal everybody, but you're just trying to provide people with another option. So what kind of reaction are you getting from the medical community, we'll call it the Orthodox medical community or traditional medicine there in the UK?
Well, it's very mixed. When I'm teaching this, the clinical hypnosis course, I tend not to... in fact, I don't even really mention the esoteric stuff, the past life work. But there are more and more doctors now that are starting to really recognise and understand that it's really important that they deal with these other aspects of a person. And in fact, a very good friend of mine is a psychiatrist, and she absolutely supports the idea of past lives. And in fact, I've done quite a few sessions with her that have revealed incredible sort of stories that really helped her to make sense of particular things that were going on in her life. So more and more, we now have one of the schools that I trained with, they've now set up a society specifically for doctors who are now training in past life regression and energy clearance work. And even in the field of mental health, they're starting to realise now that there are so many deeper aspects to a person than you know, we've been led to believe. So it's mixed.
Well, I think it's a good thing in terms of, you know, again, people are being given these different options, and it's making a difference, it sounds like. It sounds like you're having quite an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons why I put my book together was because so many incredible transformations happened for my clients as a result of not just going back and seeing who they were in their past lives, because I never do it just as a, you know, who was I, but I always do it as a therapeutic journey. And so they go back, they find the source, the origin of the challenges or the patterns that keep repeating in their lives, the lessons that they're supposed to learn but haven't quite yet. And when they get to that space of understanding, so they see who they were in the life, but at the end of the life, when they leave the body and I take them into a transformational healing space, they then get to meet with all of the people that were with them in that life and find out why they were there, what the plans were, what had they agreed to work on together. And again, often when they come across these people that were their sort of, you know, their enemies or the people that hurt them in some way, and they get the understanding of exactly why they were there playing those roles, they're then able to forgive. They're able to understand it, and they're able to let go of resentments. They're able to let go of blame. And these souls that they're forgiving are also able to let go of the guilt that they've been carrying. Yeah. And that forgiveness goes a huge way towards healing, because they're healing themselves. It's like a ripple effect. They're healing all the other people that were involved with them in those lifetimes. And it lifts the soul. It lifts the energy when they release it. As I say, this work, it's a bit like feng shui for the soul. It's a bit like clutter clearing. You know, they're clearing out all that stuff that they don't need. And there's a real sense of freedom and peace that comes from doing that. So it's very powerful. And when people came back to me after, you know, weeks, months after the sessions, so many of them reported that their lives really, really transformed as a result. Relationships changed, their work situations changed, their whole outlook on life changed. And as I was telling people these stories, many people would say, wow, that reminds me of what goes on in my life. Do you think that there might be something similar, or that I might be holding a similar belief? And again, it enabled, just by hearing these stories, it helped people to make sense of their own lives and the things that they'd been experiencing. So it's why I put the book together, because I wanted people to really understand just how powerful this healing modality could be.
Well, I know that there are all kinds of modalities. When you talk about forgiveness, I would even throw in there, of course, you have to get through forgiveness first in order to get to this next step that I think is real important, and that's gratitude.
Yes.
You're freeing yourself up when you're giving yourself forgiveness, for one, as well as others. But then you can start to build on that open space. You've cleared that out. I like the term you use, feng shui. My wife and I are in the process of clearing out a lot of stuff. We've lived here in Santa Barbara for 8 years, and we finally went through a bunch of boxes that we hadn't opened up since we moved here. Some people have the theory that, well, if you haven't opened it, you might as well just throw it away, because obviously you didn't need it. Well, I think it's still wise to go through it, but make sure you go through it and get rid of some of the things that are there if you can. We did. I mean, we can almost play handball under the house now. There's so much room. But we're doing that. I'm going through some archives of programs that I did years ago. And it's interesting to listen to them and then decide, okay, do I want to keep this? Do I want to transfer it and digitize it? And of course, then what do I do with the materials? Because I want to be responsible in that way as well. But I don't want to hang on to them anymore. And we're doing that with a lot of things. Clothing. I mean, how many shirts do I really need in the closet? You know,
yep.
I can only wear one a day.
Absolutely.
You know,
I think that we go through life accumulating, we accumulate ideas, we accumulate thoughts and beliefs about ourselves,
yes.
But we do accumulate stuff. And for so many people who have unresolved issues, or there's you know, trauma buried deep within them, things that they haven't been able to deal with and process. And of course, rather than bring it to the surface, look at it and deal with it and allow it to heal, people will self-medicate. And they mm-hmm. may medicate with food, they may medicate with alcohol, it might be drugs, it might be shopping, it might be gambling. You know, most of the addictions that are out there are purely designed to distract us from the stuff that, that we need to address. And of course, then the addictions and those things that we hold on to create their own problems because they create chaos in our life. So I do believe that it's far more important to clear the space energetically mm-hmm. around you, and absolutely right, let go of the things that you don't need. And that goes for the mental inner clutter as well.
Well, and of course, we have these wonderful plans and dreams, things that we want to do. And part of that actually really requires that we hone this stuff down. I have to tell you, I've shared this on the program many times. When we moved from Phoenix, Arizona to Santa Barbara, California, we had a moving company come and do it for us. And the way that they charge you is by the pound.
Right.
We moved into they loaded up a cab over 18-wheeler from front to back. It was full.
Wow.
9,000 pounds of stuff. Now, one of those items, yes, it was a piano, but a piano isn't that heavy. And I'm just thinking, okay, so if we choose to move again, how much of that will have we have gotten rid of? I mean, 9,000 yeah. pounds of stuff.
Yeah. It is quite incredible when you stop and take stock of your life and what you've accumulated, people, things. And for me, the trouble is that a lot of people think still that if they have more stuff, or if they have a better car, or a better home, or the latest TV, or the latest gadgets, that is going to bring them happiness. And there may be a short-lived buzz that people get from acquiring something new. But for me, happiness comes from the inside. And that when we're happy on the inside, it really doesn't matter whether we have that stuff or not. It's an additional bonus, but we don't need to have it. And that self-happiness means very much, I think, that less is more in all things. And sort of keeping things simple, I think, is quite important.
Tell me about how you came into this awareness that you had these abilities, or this ability to help people by bringing up, by going back into their past lives that helped to release the fears and all of the anxieties, to get rid of the clutter, as we've kind of said here. How did that all happen for you? What was the catalytic moment, if you will?
Well, my spiritual path had been going on since I was really, really young. And I chose to be born into an Irish Catholic family. And even at a really, really young age, when I was 9 or 10, things, maybe even younger, things that they were telling me and wanting me to believe didn't ring true for me. That on the one hand, I was supposed to believe that God was all loving and benevolent, and, you know, he was our father and was going to take care of us. And then on the other hand, if we did something wrong, we were going to be punished and go to hell forever. So my search for the kind of truth about who we were and why we were here and what was religion all about started really young, because I was challenging the Catholic Church. And of course, what I learned through my studies was that all the religions of the world tended to have a similar origin. There was a similar message at the beginning, but then it all got changed as time went on. And I found that the esoteric sides of those religions made a lot more sense for me. So the Sufis and the Kabbalists and the Gnostics and the Native American Indians. And of course, all of them had traditions where people would meditate, where they would go inside and they would connect with the Godhead within them. And that stayed with me. And I was constantly seeking, trying to find the means by which I could do that without having to become an initiate into some religion or secret society. And I almost stumbled at a crossroads at a point in my life, and I was at a crossroads and I'd asked the universe for a sign to show me what I should be doing and where I should be going. I ended up doing a course on neuro-linguistic programming. And part of the course involved doing hypnosis. And it was like a eureka moment, because the first time I put somebody into hypnosis, it felt like it was something I'd done forever. And I knew that that then was the key, because even though I tried meditation for many, many years, it was quite difficult as a Western person to quieten what they call the chattering monkey mind. And so I thought, as so many people do, that I just wasn't good at it, that meditation wasn't for me. But when I got involved with hypnosis, which is the same state really, but it's a kind of active process, because you're engaging your mind in the process to go help you to look for information or to make changes, to listen to the positive suggestions that are being made. And it all just made sense. It made absolute sense. And I was then able to tie in, once I'd done my training, the two aspects. So getting people into that state and then getting them to investigate and explore who they'd once been. I'd always believed in past lives, and I'd always believed that I'd been here before. And I think probably as a child, I could remember my past lives, and always talked about when I'd been here before, as I think many children do. But most adults just tend to think that they're fantasizing or daydreaming, so they write it off.
Mm-hmm.
And because it just made complete sense, I've just been passionate about it and learning everything I could about it ever since, really.
Well, first of all, I must commend you for coming into an Irish Catholic family. I was born into not quite the Irish part of the Catholic family, although Dugan is not bad. And I actually worked for 15 years in a Christian radio station where I even questioned. I took this position that if I was going to be labeled a heretic, I was going to wear the H proudly on my chest. Because a lot of what I was being told didn't make any sense. It was like oil and water. It just wasn't mixing. And I thought, this doesn't make any sense. A loving God, and yet here you are saying that God let this happen in our present day because, well, wait a minute, that's contradictory to a loving God. And then, of course, the justifications and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, a lot of the different issues, just like you dealt with, and I think that's real important. It may sound kind of strange, but I kind of lean towards that slogan of the '60s: "Always question authority." You know,
I've done that all my life,
and I'm sure that's gotten you into trouble from time to time.
Absolutely.
But by the same token, it's also, I'm sure, been very, very eye-opening, very enlightening, and it's given you that ability to, sort of ask the hard questions. And I've always loved doing that. And I've had the opportunity to ask the hard questions of a Catholic Monsignor at a local church in Phoenix, and it was a very good conversation. It was very friendly. There was no animosity or anything of this nature that I was wrong. And I was shocked at the answer that I got from him. I mean, it was a very honest answer to the questions that I was asking. And I thought, wow, that means that he, even as a Monsignor, does not automatically just, toe the party line. I mean, he's got his own way of thinking. And I think that's one of the things that has been so intriguing to me, is that in spite of what denomination you might have over your door, people seem to be thinking for themselves more than not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's happening, because I know when I first started doing this work, which was about 13 years ago now, 14 years ago, that there was a lot more skepticism, and people tend to poo-poo it. They thought it was just, it was all a bit weird. But people have become less satisfied with religion, and I think that they are much more wary. They are much more willing to explore other options because the traditional route hasn't actually been very satisfying for a few years for people. And so they are starting to question. They're starting to question who they are, why they're here. And I think that, again, you know, 2012, everyone's talking about the shift. But I do think that people's eyes have opened quite a lot. And I think that many more people want the truth, and they want something that makes sense to them on all different levels. They're not prepared to do the blind faith that we used to do before. And the churches nowadays are not able to provide the same levels of safety or security that they used to before. You know, there's no longer a belief that if you go to a church that they can absolve you of your sins and help you to communicate with God individually or you know, through them. I think now most people are starting to get a sense that they are divine beings, that we're all spiritual beings here having a human experience, and pretty much whatever the question is, the answer ultimately is love. You know, we're made of love, we come from love. You know, the thing that would resolve most of the world's problems was that if we took care of ourselves and took care of each other and we just loved each other, as, you know, Jesus was supposed to have said, love one another as you would have them love you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if we did that, if we all just, and I think this is one of my childhood questions, why can't people just be nice? Why can't they just be kind to one another? And I remember my father saying, but life isn't like that. And me saying, well, why not? It seemed like the simplest thing in the world to me.
Exactly. I mean, I still ask that question today, and I have to catch myself even, you know, from time to time.
And I think that the, you know, organized religion has lost a lot of followers because of a lot of the things that have come out, and because they don't necessarily, you know, traditionally, religion has not necessarily been very kind.
Yeah.
And when the premise of it is supposed to be about love, then so many people are looking at it now and saying, this doesn't make sense. And because it doesn't make sense, they're much more willing to go out and find something that does. And when they're being taught that you are more than they will have you believe, that you are incredible, you are unique, you're an amazing being here going through this life, and yes, you have challenges, and no, you don't get everything right, but that's okay because you're on a journey, and we go into acceptance and love for self and love for each other. And I think that's pretty much why we're here and what we're here to learn.
We've been talking with Lorraine Flaherty, the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy, Transformational Journeys Through Time and Space. She also has a four CD set, two parts, that's Inner Freedom 1 and Inner Freedom 2. That's pretty self-explanatory. And her website is empoweredlives.co.uk. That's empoweredlives.co.uk. And we look forward to talking with you again. And if you do find yourself in the States and you find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to talk again.
I'm coming in May, so.
Well, then let's make plans to do that.
That would be wonderful. I would love to.
Wonderful. And thank you again for joining us on the program. It's been great talking with you and learning about the work you're doing and who you are.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
They like got married 1913 when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. They want to get you a man's load right now for the go, no go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the first thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.